From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Who is Max Boot? Military historian, journalist, a hawkish think tanker who was gung-ho on the 2003 invasion of Iraq. He now regrets that. A lifelong Republican, that is, until now. Max Boot has left the GOP and is now decrying what he sees as its, quote, nativist and know-nothing tendencies. And in his new book, Max Boot asks, did he somehow contribute to the changes he laments in American conservatism? This hour on Point, Max Boot and his crisis of faith in the GOP. And you can join us. What do you make of Max Boot's road to Damascus conversion? Has your party lost its way? Or do you say good riddance to Boot and the Washington-based intellectual conservatism he once represented? And liberals, are there lessons here for Democrats, too, about the risks of embracing the far wing of either party? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. And joining me now from Washington is Max Boot. He's a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, a columnist for The Washington Post, and a CNN analyst as well. He was an advisor to Senators John McCain and Marco Rubio in their presidential campaigns. And Max Boot's new book is called The Corrosion of Conservatism, Why I Left the Right. Max Boot, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me on.
So first of all, you've been long on the record as a person who did not support the candidacy of now President Donald Trump. But at what point in time, what was the moment where you said, now I have to leave the GOP, and why then?
That moment occurred the day after the last presidential election. I mean, I was somebody who was viscerally and instantly opposed to Donald Trump from the moment that he came down that escalator at Trump Tower attacking Mexicans as rapists and murderers. I couldn't believe that you had a mainstream candidate who was talking like that, and I never imagined that he would win the Republican nomination, much less the presidency. And so I was very dismayed to see Trump's progress, first in the Republican primaries and then in the general election. It was the shock of my life, and I think many people's lives, to see Donald Trump actually win the presidency. And the next day, I knew what I had to do, which was, after a lifetime as a Republican, as a movement conservative, I re-registered as an independent, because I just knew at that point, I could not be part of this Trumpified Republican Party.
Mm. Well, so, I mean, saying movement conservative, though, what do you mean by that?
I was part of what was known as the conservative movement from a fairly early age. I was a conservative columnist at the University of California at Berkeley. I was an op-ed editor at the Wall Street Journal editorial page. I was a regular writer for commentary in the Weekly Standard. I was a foreign policy advisor to three presidential candidates. So I was fairly deep within the conservative bubble, working for what I thought was the good of America. And I was shocked, and perhaps I shouldn't have been shocked. I should have seen this all along, but I was just so dismayed to see the kind of message that Donald Trump won on, which was completely antithetical to the brand of conservatism that I champion, which I associate more with people like Ronald Reagan or George Will, a kind of a much more optimistic, open, inclusive brand of conservatism that doesn't stigmatize minorities, that focuses on American global leadership, on free trade, on limited government at home. That's the kind of conservatism that I signed up for. But that's not the kind of conservatism that Donald Trump espouses. I mean, he is somebody who uses bigotry and prejudice, caters to racism and sexism and xenophobia, divides Americans, spreads conspiracy theories. It was truly a soul-crushing event for me to see somebody like that take over the Republican Party and, in fact, the conservative movement. And that's why I exited the Republican Party. And I'm not even sure I want to call myself a conservative anymore, because I don't know what conservative means anymore other than Trump toady.
Yeah. Okay. So we're going to get to that in just a second here. But I imagine a lot of people listening to you right now are saying, they're wondering why it may have taken so long for the scales to fall from your eyes. Because, you know, I'm thinking back, in the early 1980s, 1981-ish, I believe, when Lee Atwater, you know, he was talking about, I mean, you mentioned Reagan. I have a quote here from Lee Atwater in 1981 saying, you know, as to the whole Southern strategy that Harry Dent and others put together back in 1968, opposition to the Voting Rights Act would have been a central part of keeping the South. But now Reagan doesn't even have to do that. All you have to do to keep the South for Reagan is to run in place on the issues he's already campaigning on: fiscal conservatism, balancing the budget, cutting taxes, the whole cluster. Essentially saying that there was, you know, there's been a long-standing sort of overlap between even the form of Reagan conservatism that you're talking about, Max Boot, and the deeper, darker impulses in the GOP that you now lament.
I completely agree with what you just said. And I would just quote to you the line from George Orwell, where he said, you know, the hardest thing to see is what's directly in front of your nose. And that's certainly something that was true for me. And I do ask myself now, how could I have been blind to all this? And I think the explanation is essentially that I was deep in this conservative bubble. I was very much prey to this tribalistic instinct, which I think dominates American politics, and that causes one to overlook the faults of your fellow partisans. I mean, I don't think it's just conservatives and Republicans who are guilty of that. I mean, look at the way that a lot of Democrats, for example, excused Bill Clinton's misbehavior. Mm-hmm. But I think it's definitely a larger problem on the right. And, you know, I had this kind of moment of clarity when Donald Trump took office. For years, for example, I had denied that Republicans were racist. I thought this was a horrible libel. I said, you know, I'm not racist. My friends aren't racist. Why do you say this? And then, you know, Donald Trump made it so obvious I couldn't deny it anymore, because he went from dog whistles of the kind that Republicans had employed before to a wolf whistle. And it made me realize, wait a second, the Republican coalition is not who I thought it was. These are not people who are necessarily thrilling to the ideas that are formulated by policy analysts like me. A lot of them were simply looking for a party that would bash minorities, that would bash immigrants. That's not what I want to be a part of. And of course, that was very obvious to a lot of people, including, I'm sure, you and a lot of your listeners all along. And, you know, I was woefully blind to it. And there's no excusing my blindness over all these years. All I can say is at least I'm waking up to the reality now. And most Republicans, most conservatives I know, they're still in denial.
Yeah. You know, I actually don't think it was obvious to a lot of people, right? Because amongst members of the media, after President Trump's election, there was a lot of, you know, quote unquote, how could we have missed this? So I just want to say, careful observers definitely saw a pattern over many decades. But what you're talking about now, and the clarity with which you're talking about it, not very many people were prior to President Trump winning in November of 2016, which is one of the reasons why it's so interesting to have this conversation with you now. But I want to step back in time here a little bit, Max Boot, because one of the things you write about in the book is now you're sort of examining what you see as long-running impulses that may have been sort of subterranean in the GOP coming to the surface. But of course, the repeated question is, how subterranean were they? Because back in 1964, when Barry Goldwater ran for president, I mean, he was seen by many as a fringe candidate on the right. But here he is at the Republican National Convention in San Francisco, uttering the slogan that really made him famous and brought many delegates to their feet.
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And let me remind you also that moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue.
That's Barry Goldwater in the 1964. And it was interesting because much later in life, Goldwater remarked to Senator Bob Dole that the Republican Party had moved so much that Goldwater and Dole were now considered Republicans in name only within the GOP itself. But Max Boot, when you hear that now, what does it make you think?
Well, I actually went back and read the writing of Barry Goldwater in the process of researching this book, and it made me realize he really was an extremist. I used to think that was it's maybe crazy to say this because he was defending extremism in the most famous utterance of his life. But nevertheless, I was brought up in the conservative movement, which revered Barry Goldwater as an icon of conservatism, as one of the founders of modern conservatism. And so I grew up believing that to call Barry Goldwater an extremist was a slander on his good name. And then I actually went back and read The Conscience of a Conservative, his famous 1961 book, in which he said that the federal government had no role in desegregation. He opposed the civil rights legislation of 1964, 1965, and he actually called for the possible use of nuclear weapons to liberate Eastern Europe from communist oppression. And that made me realize, wait a second, this guy really was an extremist. And it makes me realize that there is that extremist strand at the very root of the modern conservative movement. Now, that said, I don't think all of modern conservatism is extremism. And in fact, a lot of Republican and conservative leaders have actually been pretty moderate. I mean, when you think about people like George H.W. Bush or John McCain or Mitt Romney, they were good people and they stood for the right things. But there was a seething mass of extremism, this dark underside of American conservatism that I was blind to and that has now become moved in from the fringes. It's moved, you know, into becoming governing doctrine. It's become the center of the Republican Party under Donald Trump.
Max Boot, your point about moderate Republicans is very well taken, but isn't part of the story here that you're struggling with or you're exploring in your book that very moderate heart of the GOP never fully disavowed the more extremist wing of the party because that extremist wing was delivering votes for decades.
No, that's absolutely true. And I was certainly guilty of that as much as anybody else. For years, I kind of labored on my own projects of working on national security policy, and I didn't look too far to the left or right. I mean, I occasionally went on Fox News, and I thought it was kind of a carnival atmosphere over there. But I thought, oh, well, you know, this is just what you got to do to sell conservative ideas to the masses. And now I realize in retrospect, wow, I was so blind to this danger. I mean, I now regard the foundation of Fox News in 1996 as one of the most destructive milestones in recent American political history, because I now realize they were not promoting conservatism as I understood it. They were promoting this white nationalism, this ultra-populism, this very reactionary impulse, which I think is extremely dangerous. And I'm really kicking myself for not being more alive to the danger or, you know, seeing the danger of Sarah Palin or other figures obvious to many at the time, and I'm only now acknowledging it.
Yeah. Well, we're talking with Max Boot. His new book is called The Corrosion of Conservatism, Why I Left the Right. By the way, we have an excerpt of it at onpointradio.org. And what's your question for Max Boot? If you're a Republican listening now, how do you respond to Max Boot's criticism of his former party? And do you agree with it? Do you disagree? And if you think that a form of extremism has taken hold or come to the center of the Republican Party, what do you think you want to do about it? I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour with Max Boot. He was once a leading light in the conservative movement. He has since left the GOP, and he's written about why. His new book is called The Corrosion of Conservatism, Why I Left the Right, and we have an excerpt of it at onpointradio.org. If you're a Republican and you happen to agree with Max Boot about your concerns about where the GOP is headed, what do you think we ought to do to address those concerns? But if you're a Republican who thinks the party is exactly where it needs to be right now, representing your interests and doing so with full-throated passion, call us as well. What's your thought for Max Boot? Now, Max Boot, in the last segment, you mentioned what you call GOP, quote-unquote, toadies, who have been surrounding and supporting President Trump. Exactly what do you mean by that?
Well, all the people who basically flatter his ego, including people like Lindsey Graham, who once called him a kook and now talks about how Donald Trump is a superb golfer. I mean, I have chapter and verse in my book of the sycophants of Donald Trump who literally refer to him as if he were the second coming, who think that he is the savior of humanity. I mean, it's unbelievable. This is a president, who is only has the support of about 40% of Americans, and that's too high in my book. But most people recognize that he is not an admirable figure. But what's really shocking to me is the extent to which the Republican Party has transformed itself into a Donald Trump cult. I mean, so many people have drunk the Kool-Aid, including people that I once had respect for. It's really been a gut-wrenching and soul-crushing experience for me to see this going on.
Well, we have some tape here from June 2017 when the president convened his cabinet and called on every member of the cabinet to speak one by one. Now, I think some folks might remember this because some of the cabinet members looked quite uncomfortable and were careful to avoid flattering the president directly. But for many of the others, they did heap praise upon President Trump. Now, the whole sort of person-by-person moment took about 11 minutes. We're not going to play all of that, obviously. We've significantly cut it down. But here's some of the flattery that members of the cabinet were heaping upon the president in June 2017.
Thank you, Mr. President, and just the greatest privilege of my life.
President, what an incredible honor it is to lead the Department of Health and Human Services at this pivotal time under your leadership. I can't thank you enough for the privilege that you've given me and the leadership that you've shown.
I want to thank you for getting this country moving again and also working again.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
On behalf of the entire senior staff around you, Mr. President, we thank you for the opportunity and the blessing that you've given us to serve your agenda.
Thank you, Mr. President. It was a great honor traveling with you around the country for the last year, and an even greater honor to be here serving in your cabinet.
So you heard there Vice President Mike Pence, then Secretary of Health and Human Services Tom Price, Transportation Secretary Elaine Chao, and then Chief of Staff Ryan Priebus and Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin. Now, Max Boot, you know many of these people. Can you explain their seemingly unquestioning fealty to the president?
It's really a cult, and I think they feel it's necessary because they understand that Donald Trump is an egomaniac who's also very insecure and has an insatiable need for praise. And basically, he likes anybody who praises him, whether it's his cabinet members or dictators like Putin or Kim Jong-un. But, you know, that tape that you played is, to my mind, one of the most revolting and un-American spectacles I've ever heard. I mean, this is something you might expect going on in the court of Louis XIV or in Pyongyang. This is not what should be happening in the White House, the People's House, in our constitutional republic, where we did not elect Donald Trump as king. He is supposed to be the president charged with enforcing the laws, and yet he is being treated by those around him as if he were the leader of a religious cult. This is profoundly dangerous.
To be coldly cynical about this, though, Max Boot, is it realistic at all to expect politicians to act anything other than politically? And right now, they are recognizing that the center of gravity in this party is around the president of the United States.
Well, forgive me, maybe I'm naive, but I do think that politicians have a higher duty to the country and to the Constitution than they do to their own reelection prospects. This has been so dismaying to me to see Republicans that I once respected, people like Paul Ryan, Marco Rubio, Lindsey Graham, and on and on and on, who have sold out their beliefs, who will not say in public what I know they understand in private, which is that Donald Trump is utterly unfit to be president. And why won't they do that? Because they're all terrified of what happened to Mark Sanford, the Republican congressman in South Carolina who spoke out against Trump. Trump tweeted against them. He lost his reelection. Okay, this is not the end of the world, okay? It's not like Trump is sending out death squads to kill people. The worst thing that will happen to these folks is that they will lose reelection. But better to lose re-election than to lose their principles. And they have lost their principles. They have lost their way. Very, very dismaying to see.
But let me see. I'm trying to figure out the right way to ask it. But can't the argument be made, and perhaps this is the argument that you're making in the book, that those very principles, though, are what got the GOP to where it is right now? I mean, for example, you know, I'm looking at your own support, your vociferous support in the early 2000s for the Iraq War. And there are many people today who cast their vote for President Trump because they look at things like the Iraq War as the epitome of international elitism gone awry, that was money and effort that should have been spent right here in the United States. So you see what I'm saying? Like there were many conservative, principled conservatives who supported the Iraq War in 2003. Those same people surrounding themselves or surrounding the president right now. So was it not inevitable in a way that we arrived here?
I don't think it was inevitable, but it's certainly understandable because I think the establishment made a lot of big mistakes, including the Iraq War, including the mistakes that led to the Great Recession of 2008-2009, and that discredited mainstream Republican orthodoxy. And I write in the book, and in what I think is try to do in a very honest and self-searching way, mm-hmm. about my own responsibility for getting here. I was certainly a proponent of the Iraq War, along with 72% of the population, but I was certainly more prominent than most of that 72%. And for years, I was very defensive about the disaster that ensued and refused to completely renounce my decision. And now with the clarity of hindsight and looking back and trying to figure out my way forward, I make a clean breast of it in the book. And I say, you know, this was a mistake and I was wrong to have advocated the war. This is a terrible disaster for which I have to take ownership. And I think that other, you know, supporters and architects of the war should take ownership of it as well. And there's, of course, the irony is that Donald Trump himself was a supporter of the war, even though he won't admit it now. Mm-hmm. But there's no question that these kinds of miscalculations led the way and opened the way to Trumpism, which, you know, I think is a catastrophe for America and the world, far worse than what we've seen in the past, because he is, you know, undermining our democracy with his attacks on the rule of law. He's undermining American leadership abroad. He's undermining American allies. He's opening the way for dictators. So, you know, this is the terrible situation, but, you know, we have to be honest and admit that the Republican establishment was not blameless in getting us here.
Yeah. Well, we're speaking with Max Boot this hour. His new book is The Corrosion of Conservatism, Why I Left the Right. Max, let's get a couple callers here if we can. Let's first go to Mike, who's calling from Winterville, North Carolina. Mike, you're on the air.
Max?
Yes.
I agree with your analysis completely. I think Trump is an absolutely horrible president. I was telling all my friends that I could vote against him in the primaries. But leaving the party is a terrible mistake. We need to fight for our party and hope that someone like, I have a mental block on Flake's name, or Ben Sasse, or mm-hmm. some decent Republican comes in and challenges him, if he's still president in 2020, to fight against him. Leaving the party is just wrong.
Hey, Mike, before I turn it back to Max, so let me ask you, I mean, you mentioned Jeff Flake. I would say you could Jeff Flake, Bob Corker, all these Republicans who are choosing to retire rather than to continue their political career. And I don't hear any of them saying that they're going to run for president. So it seems like they're saying there's no room for them at all in the party.
Well, they haven't said whether they're going to run or not, but there are Republicans like Ben Sasse. My Congressman Walter Jones is fixing to retire after this term because he's getting up there in age. But we need to fight for our party. And if Trump does win in 2020 in the nomination, vote for the Constitution Party. Don't vote Democrat and don't vote for the liberals, because they're just going to pass more legislation, more statist legislation. And how long will it take to unravel that?
Yeah. Mike, thank you for your call. Max Boot, Mike's hitting on something that you've said in multiple interviews around this book, that you're actually advocating for like-minded Republicans who may agree with you to vote Democratic. But Mike's saying, no way.
Well, I think you have to be honest about the nature of the American political system. It's a binary choice. Either the Republicans or Democrats are going to win, because sadly, and it's a tragedy, there is not a viable third party that can actually win. And so in November, I think that everybody in America should be voting straight ticket Democratic. And I say this as somebody who is not a Democrat, who disagrees with Democrats on many issues. But to me, this is beyond partisan politics. This is an issue of our democracy being at stake, because Donald Trump is undermining the rule of law. He is threatening our democracy. Republicans will not stand up to him. And so I think it's imperative to get the opposition party into power to investigate things. For example, the New York Times, they just had this massive expose about accusing Donald Trump and his family of committing massive tax fraud, of defrauding the U.S. government of hundreds of millions of dollars. And I'm sure that's only the tip of the iceberg. But Republicans on Capitol Hill will not investigate. In fact, they're running interference with Donald Trump. So we have to have Democrats. We have to have checks and balances. And then in the future, I hope that somebody in the Republican Party will challenge Donald Trump. It's not going to be easy, and he's certainly not going to be defeated when he has 80 to 90% approval ratings as he does right now. But I think it is important for somebody to run in the primaries in 2020 and try to fly the flag of a more principled conservatism and to hope for better days ahead.
Hmm. Now, you know, in your hearing your call for people to vote straight Democratic, I mean, isn't part of the problem right now our two-party system? Because I'm hearing voices like yours of folks who have left the Republican Party, you know, even some disaffected Democrats who don't like the direction their party is going, that I hear their anger and their discontent and their desire for change, but then I don't hear what should be, I would say, the next area of exploration is why can't we have a viable third party? If there's this giant silent center of folks who are dismayed at the directions things are going either to the right or to the left, why not create a really effective counterbalancing third party, Max Boot?
I would love it if that could happen. The problem is that our entire political system is basically designed to entrench this two-party duopoly. I mean, in my book, I do lay out some faint hope. I would love to see like somebody like Emmanuel Macron, the centrist who became president of France by running against the major parties. It would be awesome if somebody could do that here. And I think there is the possibility of somebody doing that. I don't know who that person is. I think, but you know, if you look at party affiliation, there are more independents than there are Republicans or Democrats. So clearly there is a giant mass of centrist voters who are not being represented, especially as you see the Republican Party going to the right and the Democratic Party going to the left. A lot of people like me are feeling politically homeless in the middle. So it would be awesome if there could be a third way that would arise to represent a more centrist mm-hmm. band of politics. But we just have to recognize it's very, very difficult because there has not been a third party that has succeeded in America since the 1850s when the Republican Party was born.
Let's go to Jayla, who's calling from Dayton, Ohio. Jayla, you're on the air.
Hi. I'd like to mention that I am not a Republican. I have voted for Democrats, Republicans, and Independents. I did not vote for Donald Trump because I like Donald Trump, but I could not stomach another Clinton in the White House. But more importantly, there are a huge number of conservative voters, whether they are registered or not as Republicans, who are very, very concerned about the assault, both in the media, primarily in the media, and also on college campuses, against values that I hold dear mm-hmm. and things that I think are important. For example, Roe versus Wade. Overthrow it? No. Revise it? Yes. We have so much more medical information now about the nature of what happens when an egg meets a sperm. And apart from that, I think that there are many, many people who, again, like me, don't like Donald
right.
Trump, but do not see an alternative.
Uh-huh.
And a third party would be nice.
Jayla, I'm going to take it back from you there. And thank you so much for your call. Max Boot, your response to her, I mean, she's saying that she's never registered with a party, didn't want to vote for Donald Trump, but didn't see another alternative on the more conservative side.
Well, there's no question that one of Donald Trump's biggest advantages was that he was not Hillary Clinton. And he did a very effective job of demonizing Hillary Clinton, taking this respected former First Lady and Secretary of State and Senator and turning her into this caricature called Crooked Hillary. And I mean, it's pretty ironic that Trump and his surrogates were chanting lock her up at these rallies. And in fact, many of these same surrogates are now going to jail. People like Paul Manafort and Mike Flynn and Rick Gates. Donald Trump was actually surrounded by people who are now felons. And so the notion that Hillary Clinton was an evil criminal and Donald Trump is going to save us from her is ridiculous because there is far more criminality around Trump. But, you know, obviously Hillary Clinton was not an effective campaigner and she lost. But that's not the choice going forward. I mean, the choice now is not between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. Clinton is not on the ballot in November. There are a lot of different Democrats on the ballot, and a lot of them are actually pretty moderate and centrist. Some aren't. But again, as I say, I think you should be backing the Democrats no matter what, because we need a check and balance on Donald Trump and his abuse of power. And whatever your view of abortion or other issues, I would hope that as Americans, we would all agree on the need to uphold the rule of law.
So, but Max Boot, hypothetically, if say, the Democrats were to win a sweeping victory in these midterms or even in the next presidential cycle, though, what makes you confident that that would provide the true check to the basic impulses that you're talking about that have been unleashed with the presidency of Donald Trump? Those impulses, are they not still there within the GOP?
Well, absolutely. And that's why I don't think the Republican Party can be trusted with power anytime soon. But I'm also worried about the direction of the Democratic Party. I mean, you had comments in the last few days from Hillary Clinton and Eric Holder, two people I respect, basically saying we don't need to have any civility with these Republicans, you know, essentially saying when they go low, we're going to go low, too. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's the right way. That's not how you're going to win over the center of voters. That may thrill progressive activists, but that's really playing into Donald Trump's hands with his caricature of the Democrats as a mob. They're not a mob, and don't play into that stereotype.
Well, we're speaking with Max Booth this hour. His new book is The Corrosion of Conservatism, Why I Left the Right. And we want to hear from you. What do you think about Booth's lamenting of the direction the GOP has gone, about his criticism of President Donald Trump? Do you agree with him? Or do you hear a conservative intellectual or former conservative intellectual who you think may be out of touch with the real needs and thoughts and dreams and hopes of American Republicans? I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour with Max Booth. His new book is The Corrosion of Conservatism, Why I Left the Right. He's a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, a columnist for The Washington Post, and an analyst on CNN as well. And Max, I'm going to go to a couple more callers here because they've got a lot to say. So let's turn to Stephen, who's calling from Norfolk, Virginia. Stephen, you're on the air.
Hi, Meghna and Max. Thanks for taking my call. So I'm a moderate Democrat, probably closer to independent. And my biggest concern is that I recognize that there's value in both conservatism, protecting individual rights, while at the same time trying to come together society, to grow society. And my biggest concern is that you see these fringes that are just pushing further right and left to both protect the greedy and protect the lazy, respectively. So, you know, it seems like, gosh, I'm getting pulled in these two directions. And, you know, here's Donald Trump, you know, pulling towards the greedy and his minions. And it just, it is incredibly frustrating for people like me in the middle that, you know, can't find our way. So just wondering if you could comment on that.
Stephen, thanks for your call. Max Booth, go ahead.
Well, I feel Stephen's pain. I mean, I feel exactly the same way. I'm politically homeless. I can't be part of this Trumpified Republican Party, but I don't feel comfortable being part of the Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren Party either. And so I'm stranded in the middle. I think, you know, look, I think Democrats have an opportunity here because I think there are a lot of disaffected voters who could not be part of what Donald Trump is selling, but they don't know about the Democrats either because a lot of Democrats seem pretty extreme for them. Like, I'm in that category. If Democrats, I think, go to the center, there can be a historic realignment of American politics of the kind that you saw in the 1930s that would make the Democrats the majority party for 50 years to come. I think the way they do that is by nominating somebody who was pretty centrist in 2020 and not going to the progressive extreme.
Well, but all the forces that we've seen in terms of the primary process, in terms of campaign finance, the things that beleaguer the Republican Party, some of the things that beleaguer the Republican Party also beleaguer the Democrats as well. I mean, do you think that in the 2020 cycle that the Democrats might actually nominate a centrist versus someone who's on the more progressive wing?
Well, I think anything is possible. I mean, who would have imagined that the Republicans would nominate Donald Trump in 2016? So we don't know who the Republican, who the Democratic nominee is going to be in 2020. But there is no question that almost all of the major contenders, the people that are being talked about as nominees, potential nominees, are certainly from the progressive wing of the party. And that concerns me as somebody who's more of a centrist, a center-right person.
Yeah. Well, let's go to Joe, who's calling from St. Petersburg, Florida. Joe, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I guess my question has to do with the fact that as a Christian, I talk to a lot of my friends, and when we do stray into politics, most of my Christian friends consider themselves conservative Christians, and they don't even have to say that they're Republican. Whereas most of my other friends who might be of other denominations are some type of liberal Democrat. When I find that people that aren't religious are Republican, whether they be gay or minority or whatnot, it usually has to do with the money that they have and wanting to be able to preserve their money for their future. So my question is as a liberal Democrat Christian, my thought is that for the good of the world, we're supposed to take care of each other. And the whole entire point of our government is to make sure that everybody gets by and everybody has the ability to pursue their happiness. My question for you is, what was the original point of having a conservative wing of the party back when you joined? And did the influx of the religious right in any way sway your decision to abandon the party?
Joe, thanks for your call. Go ahead, Max.
Well, the religious right has always been a big part of the Republican Party going back to the 1960s. And it's dismaying to me to see what happened with that wing of the party, the evangelicals. I mean, I agreed with a lot of them in the late 1990s when they were castigating Bill Clinton for misconduct, for embarrassing the country, for lowering our moral tone. I thought that was correct. But now these very same people, these arch moralists and scolds who were criticizing Bill Clinton, have nothing to say about Donald Trump's transgressions. You know, this is a president who has violated federal law in order to pay off a Playboy playmate and a porn star that he had allegedly had affairs with. This is a president who has been credibly accused of massive tax fraud. This is a president who lies 8 times a day. You know, I'm reminded of Bill Bennett's book from 1998 or 1999 called The Death of Outrage, where he was lamenting the fact that more people were not outraged about Bill Clinton's misbehavior. Well, The Death of Outrage is actually a pretty good description of the Christian right today, including people like Bill Bennett, where they have nothing to say about the shocking immorality of the president that they support.
Max Boot, I want to return to something that we talked about a little bit earlier for a second that we should spend more time on, and that's this question or this issue of race and how that has shaped the direction the Republican Party is going in. Because I'm thinking of the number of times you've pointed out several where the president has said things even before he was elected and after that many people looked upon and said that was racist. But the GOP firmament around him, you know, thinking of House Speaker Paul Ryan going so far as to release statements saying, yes, that was a textbook racist remark. But but nevertheless, I'm going to still support the president of the United States because he's helping us deliver on tax cuts, which are important to a lot of people, and conservative judges, which are also important to a lot of people. So for as long as that, you know, this is your term, Faustian bargain exists, what hope do you have for change if the change has to come within the party structure as well?
I have little hope for the Republican Party unless they suffer repeated and devastating defeats. They have to know there will be a political price to pay for trafficking in bigotry and prejudice for political gain. There is nothing I've seen in American political life in my lifetime that is more despicable than this. They know what they're doing, and they don't care. They are claiming that they can support Donald Trump because he's for tax cuts, and then they ignore everything else, including all of his racist baggage when he, you know, refers to Latino immigrants as snakes and animals who breed and infest. He calls African countries, you know, he says neo-Nazis are fine people. He locks up children of undocumented immigrants. This is a disgrace, and the Republican Party is disgracing itself by going along with this.
Well, let's go to another call here. Ira is calling from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Ira, you're on the air.
Hi, Edna. Max Boot, I would like to take my hat off to you. I am in total approbation of the courage that you show and the intelligence and analysis. You are absolutely correct about the current situation. It could be no doubt any man or woman of integrity would face down Trump immediately and call him out for what he is, a two-bit total dictator and another Hitler. However, I'd like to tell you, there's no need to be in utter despair. We are a great nation. We went through the horror and the bloodbath of the Civil War, and we binded our wounds together, though it took 160 years to fully do it. We've pretty much done it now. But the one people who will never recover, as a democracy, we will recover, but the evangelist people who supported Trump 81% and now support him 91%, they shall never recover. Their pretense to be a religious people or a moral people.
Ira, let me just jump in here for a second before I let you go. I hear what you're saying, and I hear your passion a lot, and I'm going to have Max Boot respond to it in just a moment. But when you said that you see the president as another Hitler, isn't the very fact that that is the tenor of political conversation in America right now, isn't that part of the problem? Because what you yourself said, with all due respect, Ira, is also incredibly extreme. And it makes it hard to have any kind of civil coming together in this country.
No future generations will realize that he was, in fact, another Adolf Hitler. This is not histrionics and not in any way exaggeration, not at all.
I don't want to have this conversation be turned too much towards that. But you're equating the president of the United States right now with the man who led the murder of 6 million people in Europe in the middle of the century. Are you really saying that?
Who were killed in the Holocaust, and he is another Hitler, as bad, if not worse, than Adolf Hitler.
All right. Ira, let me take it back from you. And thank you for your call. Max Boot, I understand that people on the left are people across America have lots of strong feelings, positive and negative, about the president. But what does it say to you that this is some of the extent to which the conversation has gone? If we're going to, try and talk about extremism in any party, what do you make of what Ira said?
Well, I think you were right to call him out for an extremist statement. I mean, I take a back seat to no one in my abhorrence of Donald Trump, but he is clearly not another Hitler. In fact, there is not another Hitler because Hitler was uniquely evil. And I think we need to keep a sense of perspective and recognize that Donald Trump is, in fact, a threat to democracy. He is, in fact, a terrible president. He is an unethical president, but we don't need to go to the extreme of labeling him another Hitler because that just feeds into Donald Trump's own narrative, his rhetoric about how his opponents are really the extremists. And I think it is very important for those of us opposing Donald Trump, whether from the conservative end of the spectrum or the liberal side of the spectrum, to remember that there are values that also unite all Americans. And we need to try to model those values as well as advocate them. We need to model civility. We need to model reasonable political discourse. We're not going to beat Donald Trump by becoming as extreme as he is.
Let's go to Tim, who's calling from Northborough, Massachusetts. Tim, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. And I just want to say a couple of things, and I do have a question for Max. What you said earlier, better to lose an election than to principles, I think is an excellent statement, because what dismays me is watching many politicians kowtow to someone like Trump just because they want to stay in office. So my question has to do with this. He does have a base. There's no denying that. How is one to get through to that base to help them understand what he's doing is wrong, and they're not really going to benefit from what he's saying because he's an empty coat. He's an empty suit. He has no idea what he's doing. And the people that he has surrounded himself have just about, as you said earlier, are behaving like like the King Henry VIII court there. And one final thing is that, I kind of chuckle at this whole push against conservatism versus liberalism. And you may not agree with this, but from my perspective, conservatism is nothing but liberalism light. I'll take my answer off the air then. Thank you for doing what you're doing, Max.
Tim, thank you for your call. Max Boot, your response?
I think it's very hard to get through to Trump's hardcore base. I mean, remember, even Richard Nixon, right before he resigned office in 1974, still had the support of a majority of Republicans. Okay, the tribal instinct is very, very strong. So you're not going to get through to the hardcore Kool-Aid drinkers who have signed up for Donald Trump come hell or high water. But the good news is that's a minority of the country. I mean, at the moment, Donald Trump has the support of about 40-41% of the country. And I would say maybe 30% are hardcore. I think there is maybe 10% of that overall support, which is not rabid, which is malleable. And I think, if you present facts to them, and if Robert Mueller presents facts, and if there is more news about what Donald Trump is up to, I think you can peel away some of that support. And then if that were to happen, I mean, if he goes below 40%, he is going to be in catastrophic free fall.
Let's take one more call here. Jose is calling from Southington, Connecticut. You're on the air, Jose.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. Great show. I just wanted to let you guys know that being a minority, I'm Hispanic. I'm almost 48 years old. I started out as a Democrat. I became a Republican. When Donald Trump got the primary, I never thought in a million years that he would get it. I thought it was a joke. But after he got it, and as time went by, I got on board. And one of the primary reasons why I got on board, being a Christian, like some of the callers were saying, you know, I never supported Bill Clinton, you know, but seeing our religious freedoms being attacked under the previous administration and then having someone like Hillary, you know, promising to continue pretty much on basis on the things that she said, that's why I got on board. And I am glad he became president. I like what he's doing. I don't agree with how he talks and everything he says, but I do believe that he loves his country and is putting this country first. And here's another thing.
Hey, Jose, can I just jump here for a second? We're running out of time here, but I just want to ask you a quick question before I turn it back to Max Boot. How did you see your religious freedoms get attacked under previous administrations?
Well, the things that were happening with the Catholic sisters, the situation with the baker, and other things like that in the past, you know, that's how I see our religious freedoms under attack. And I just want to let Mr. Booth know, Mr. Booth, there is a lot more support for Donald Trump than a lot of people realize. Just like the polls right now, we can't even trust the polls. The polls said Trump wasn't supposed to win. Hillary was supposed to win. So I think that people are going to be surprised when Donald Trump, you know, there's a great chance he might get elected again.
So well, anyway, sorry, Jose, I didn't mean to cut you off there, but thank you very much for your call. Max Boot, Jose, I think, represents a lot of people out there listening. And what would you say to him?
Well, it's just hard for me to see Donald Trump as a champion of religious freedom because he has no understanding or no knowledge of religion. And he is, in fact, a deeply cynical, amoral figure. You know, the caller said that he loves his country. I have seen very little evidence of that. I mean, the one thing that Donald Trump clearly loves is himself. I mean, he's really in love with himself and he wants to promote himself. But I've never seen him sacrifice anything for this country. I mean, this is a man who made fun of John McCain, one of our greatest war heroes, while at the same time avoiding the Vietnam draft and saying that not catching a sexually transmitted disease was my personal Vietnam. That's what Donald Trump said. So that is not the profile of somebody who loves his country. But I agree with what the caller said, that he may well get reelected, that maybe the polls don't reflect the full nature of his support. I think that's a real possibility that we need to brace ourselves for.
Well, so we've just got about 40 seconds here left, Max. I'm just wondering, we've talked a lot about what you are opposing now, but what is it that you would say you stand for?
I stand for moderation and centrism. I mean, I'm a social liberal. I'm a fiscal conservative. I'm somebody who believes in free trade and American global leadership. I believe in gun control and immigration. But that set of beliefs is not represented by any one political party at the moment.
And isn't that the great problem here, that there is no political party for those vast millions who feel the same way as you?
That is a huge problem.
Well, Max Boot, his new book is The Corrosion of Conservatism, Why I Left the Right. We have got an excerpt of it at onpointradio.org. Max, thank you so very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.